Welcome to Alaska Edition, a weekly public affairs program produced by Alaska Public Media in the studios of KAKM. The host and moderator for Alaska Edition is Michael Carey.
Thank you for joining us. Our guests are Paul Jenkins of the Anchorage Daily Planet, Liz Ruskin, the Washington correspondent of Alaska Public Media, and Sean Dugan of the Dispatch News. Paul, the Assembly comes up with an alternative to the controversial Anchorage labor law, but Mayor Dan Sullivan vetoes the measure. What are the consequences?
It would be AO 80. It was brought up by Jennifer Johnson in an attempt, I think, to keep this thing off the November ballot. It passed 7-4. It was vetoed. They tried an override that failed. And what it means for the November ballot is there's going to be a lot of Democratic labor showing up to vote on this measure on the November general election that normally wouldn't have if we're not there. What effect that will have on the Republicans, I don't know, but it's certainly going to draw the people to the polls that they didn't show
Mayor
up.
Mayor Sullivan presents himself as a man of principle that he vetoed
He said he vetoed it because it was supposed to be a compromise, but it added in everything the unions wanted, and he said it had no appearance of being a compromise. And so he, to keep true to the original law, he vetoed it. That was it. He couldn't override it.
Now, is there any chance that the Assembly members can come up with some changes that'll get them an eighth vote or change the mayor's mind?
I don't think so.
Too late in the game?
I think it's kind of late for that.
I think it's interesting to note, though.
Sean, go ahead.
Yeah, it might not matter because if you follow the political end game here, if Mayor Sullivan becomes lieutenant governor, then at this point Patrick Flynn would assume the mayoral position. And even if they had a conservative in Flynn's seat, they could still pass AO 80 6-5, and then Flynn, of course, would not veto that.
So veto it.
The vote, if it doesn't pass on the election to repeal it, it could still be repealed anyway.
So we're getting into some potentially very complicated politics, which would also include when the election is certified.
Right.
And how that might affect the role Sullivan plays and where is he, Juneau or Anchorage, right?
Yeah, and how he handles that after the primary, should he win the primary and go from there. But if he does win the lieutenant governor position, he said that his last day on the job would be, I think he's sworn in, the first of the year?
No, it's in December.
Okay,
December
and then Patrick Flynn, they could vote to reorganize, but it seems Patrick Flynn would ascend to the mayor's position, and he has said before that he would.
I may have been confusing there because there's a difference in when the mayor of Anchorage is sworn in.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a few month lag there. Yeah.
Okay, Liz Ruskin, debates, and more debates. Liz, you've been participant in at least one that's right here at this table, and you and I attended the Chamber of Commerce debate, and we've seen a lot of Senate candidates, Republican candidates, and they've had a lot to say.
Yes, and as you may have noticed, we only had two at our debate on Wednesday. Mr. Sullivan didn't make it, and it's a bit of a mystery why, but it was, I believe, the only one he skipped.
And his explanation was?
Well, we got a few different explanations, and we'd been asking him for weeks, and months really. At first he said no, he only wanted to do five debates, but then he added some. They said his campaign said they wanted to get him around the state traveling in an RV, but on our debate night, he was knocking on doors in Anchorage and Eagle River, and we don't really know why he didn't come.
Well, from that perspective, it's sort of people in the media and others will wonder if you go door to door and in a nice community, you might meet 50 people in a night if you're really busy and people are home, but you can talk to the whole state of Alaska on public broadcasting. What's
right.
the choice?
Right.
Let's perhaps go to the themes the candidates have been stressing as they attempt to differentiate themselves approaching Tuesday.
Sullivan has definitely been portraying himself as the only one who can beat Begich. He's talking a lot about Obama and Reid and
Harry Reid,
right. He's running against them as much as he is against Miller and Treadwell. Treadwell's portraying himself as the guy with all these years in Alaska and the policy chops and the knowledge of in-depth knowledge of Alaska issues. And Miller, of course, is the hardcore conservative.
Yeah, it seems to me that watching Miller, once again, he's positioning himself as, I'm the only stand-up guy in the room here, and I'm the only guy willing to tell it like it is.
Yeah, and he's pretty compelling to watch in that role. You know, he doesn't have to moderate his position much. He's not walking any thin lines. He's just tacking hard to the right and making the others
Doesn't it look like what he's looking for is some massive Tea Party turnout that'll float things in his direction?
He can hope, yeah.
Okay, we'll see. He's also been talking a lot about immigration.
Yeah.
Perhaps you could enlighten us on that.
Yeah, that seems to be a theme that he's picked as a winner for him. He sent out that mailer with the photos of ostensibly of immigrants. It was Latin American gang members with lots of facial tattoos, very scary pictures, and it's upset a number of people and certainly got people's attention.
He gives, I'm sure you've seen this presentation, I know you have, where he says, I'm in favor of immigration, I have immigrants in my own background and family, and my daughter's in Mexico, she'd married a Mexican national, but we want to do it the right way.
Right.
And then he has, somehow connects us all to gun control.
Right. He says that the mailer, which I don't quite understand, says that these immigrants, illegals, as he calls them, want to come here and they will weaken your Second Amendment rights. I don't know why Latin American gang members would be opposed to the Second Amendment, but that seems to be the implication of the
mailer. I actually don't know why Latin American gang members would have heard of the Second Amendment, but maybe we'll leave it there. Sean, you want to get in here? You have some thoughts on the end of the campaign as it approaches.
Yeah, I think that we've seen a few debates now, and certainly not all the candidates have been at every debate, but I agree with Liz. I think that one of the things that that comes across is Joe Miller's charisma and the fact that he's comfortable in the debate. And I think that the fact that he's a guy who portrays himself to be somebody who's not compromising any of his principles, he's not looking to go to Washington and work with people to compromise on solutions, I think that gives him a certain personal power when he's at these debates. You know, guys like Treadwell and Sullivan, who may be willing to work with the other side of the aisle to get some things done, when they explain that, it doesn't give him that kind of power of believing
really,
what you're saying.
It's quite remarkable to see Joe Miller in debate will say, the problem the Republican Party has is we've been too moderate.
Right.
That this is in the context of the Congress that we've got.
Well, and frankly, there are a hardcore group of people that absolutely agree with him. I mean, we were talking earlier about if you get out of Anchorage, there are a lot of Joe Miller signs in on the road system in parts of this state. And there's been a building sense among some conservatives that they're tired of compromising, that they're not gonna stand for that anymore. And so that appeals to people, I think.
And every once in a while we like to take our viewers and listeners behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. And this is something they would not know. That in the workup for the debate that Channel 11 and the News Dispatch News put on, mm-hmm. you played Joe Miller.
I did. Thanks for adding me on that, Mike. Yeah, I did. You know, every debate you go through prep
I heard
to
you
see
were terrific.
How things are going to work. Well, I spent some time reading his website and reading his stance, and you know, I've seen Mr. Miller quite a few times, and it was fun actually to portray him.
Paul,
at the outset, I would just add, he surprised Lisa Murkowski when he ran against her. He could surprise people this time around. He does appeal to a large segment of Alaska. He has a tremendously high negative right now. I think what we're seeing here is a guy trying to rehab his political standing in the state. He's now stepping up and making it clear, yeah, I'm going to support whoever wins this thing. Before, that was iffy. This is the kind of thing when you're looking down the road at the next election or the election after that, this all comes back and has payoffs. I think that's what we're seeing here. But at the outset, I wouldn't count this guy out.
Doesn't it seem like to you really turnout can be very important to what
turnout would be
him,
is tremendous in this race, you bet.
Okay. Well, and let's not forget real quickly, he's now saying he would support the Republican candidate, whoever it might be, but that doesn't mean his supporters will support that stance. Mm. He has been saying for months, if not years, that he's the only guy that can beat Mark Begich, and that if we go with somebody who's wishy-washy or somebody who's not as committed as he is, that we won't beat Begich. So that's the message he's been putting out, and that message may now change a little bit, but it'd be interesting to see how some of his core supporters feel should he lose the election.
Okay, Sean, let's stick with you. The battle over oil taxes continues. Everywhere you look, information of all kinds is in front of you. You can just drive around Anchorage to look at signs, watch your television set, turn on your computer, and is either side making any additional gains as we approach the day that it all comes down?
I have no idea, but I will tell you they are certainly out in force. If you drive down the Old Seward Highway here in Anchorage, there's usually a group of vote yes on one at the corner of Old Seward and Northern Lights, and then there's a no on one a block away at Old Seward and Benson. So are they making any gains with the voters? I can't answer that. I will say that I do agree with Alex DeMarban, who wrote a pretty big good piece for us at the Dispatch about this, said that the one thing that's certain is the facts seem to get squishier by the day. Now, people on both sides are using estimates of the future to advocate for or against Proposition 1. And nobody knows what oil prices are going to do in the future. Nobody knows what exploration is going to find. So, short story, no, I can't answer that.
So we have
question.
One group singing, the end is near, and the other group singing, we've only just begun.
Absolutely. That's
okay.
A good way to put it.
Are the voters showing any sign of fatigue, the ones that you run into?
This one is, I'll tell you that much.
Autobiographical moment, okay. Yeah. Paul, it's time to pay the piper. The federal government is telling the Mat-Su Borough to pay some $12 million for the 195-foot ferry Susitna, a ferry nobody apparently seems to want.
Nobody has wanted it from day one, I don't think. It's racking up bills in Ketchikan sitting there, what, $50,000 a month, something like that. The Federal Transit Administration says, listen, Senator Ted Stevens may have gotten this $80 million boat built, all 195 feet of it. Nobody wants to build terminals on either side of the inlet. We want to be paid. We're going to get paid out of this no matter what. Mat-Su Borough made overtures to say, well, could you maybe give us a break? No, pay up. So 6%, they got to pay up by, I think, the 5th or 6th of September.
Well, this would seem to me a classic situation where our congressional delegation would be telling the federal government, my constituents need a little help here.
They need some help. I'm sure that that's underway. But nonetheless, the bill is coming due. The assembly there is supposed to take this up, I guess, next week, 22nd meeting, and they'll decide what to do with this thing.
And the federal government has said once again that when the first payment is due?
I think it's 5th or 6th of September, and then it's 6% a month after that.
You get a form letter.
Yeah, that's right.
Sincerely yours, Uncle Sam. Okay, Liz,
me
Treadwell and Dan Sullivan are trading charges over the sources of their wealth. Treadwell's investment, the Sullivan family money in Ohio, and really they have a worldwide corporation of vast reach. What is going on in this competition to diss the other man's resources?
It is interesting, and the accusations are somewhat parallel. I would say it started with this mailer that Sullivan sent out accusing Treadwell of being involved with a company that accepted stimulus money, which he did. He was involved with this company.
That's Obama administration and
the Obama administration stimulus package, yeah. And this company called Ellicott Dredge took $6 million worth of stimulus money. But the accusation and the mailer, which, you know, among other things, I would think Meade should be really upset about the picture of his neck. They gave him this big flabby neck. But that gave Treadwell an opportunity to talk about RPM International, which is Sullivan's family paint company. Now, you might say, well, Sullivan's not a board member of that company and isn't officially involved with it. That's true. And Treadwell says, though, it's still relevant because his family and other executives at RPM have funded so much of his campaign. But anyway, that company accepted even more stimulus money, $15 million, and they also had this kind of embarrassing settlement with the federal government over overcharging the government, a $60 million settlement. So all that, you know, the mailer
the family company had to write Uncle Sam a $60 million check?
It's a publicly traded company,
oh, okay.
But yes, yeah, they had to write a $60 million check to settle these claims. And so anyway, it is sort of saying your company that you got your wealth from is worse than the one I got my wealth from. So
this is the specter of two respectable Republicans who went to very la-di-da private schools,
right.
Arguing about, not that you're rich, but you got rich from a Democrat, Obama? Is that what the argument is?
Basically, yes. Yes, that's basically it.
Okay, thank you. Sean, NSTAR, our natural gas provider here in South Central Alaska for something like 137,000 people, is in turmoil. Workers are out on strike. Who are these workers? Why have they gone on strike? What is the company's response?
Well, first of all, 137,000 connections. So that's many, many more people. That's 137,000 homes and businesses. So NSTAR has several groups of employees, two of which are represented by Local 367. That's the Plumbers and Steam Fitters Union. One are clerical employees, and then one are the operational employees. They're the guys that go around and fix leaks. They put new pipe in. They replace old pipe. They're on strike after months of failed negotiations with NSTAR, and it really boils down to what we're seeing in a lot of public sector contract negotiations is defined benefits versus defined contributions. NSTAR right now offers its employees a defined benefit plan, a pension type plan. Now there's a 401k component of that plan, but they want to put all new employees on the 401k only, the defined contribution, meaning you know what you pay every month, but you don't know what you're going to get out at the end. The employees are absolutely not going for that, and so we end up where there's very little room to negotiate between the two sides. The union went on strike on Monday, I believe it is Friday now as we tape this, and there's already been at least a half dozen unfair labor practice charges filed by the union. And
to the consumers, and you corrected me, and you were right about defining who consumers are, does this make an everyday difference in their experience of turning on their stove?
Hard to say. My stove worked just fine last night. I don't know about anybody else here in South Central. The gas is still flowing. There was a gas leak. Those things do happen. The union is making some claims about how that was handled without its employees in place. There have been some talk about people having a harder time paying bills with NSTAR. So really, I think the short-term effects are negligible. If this drags on, though, into the winter months when more and more work needs to get done, NSTAR does have subcontractors they're using, but it could start potentially to affect the way that gas is
and
delivered.
Tell us about the difference between the NSTAR workers you described, the field workers and the clerical staff, which I assume most of them are in the offices.
Right. The clerical staff are the ones that answer the phones and the ones that help you pay your bills. They actually accepted NSTAR's contract offer, but since both unions are represented, or both groups are represented by the same union, originally, the union said that you could strike. They have worked out a deal with NSTAR saying that those employees should go back to work, but it will be up to them. So they're not going to be fired if they don't go to work. So they accepted the offer, and the operational employees did not accept the offer. I haven't gotten an explanation from the union about why that was.
Okay. Paul, the Air Force says Fairbanks is the best locations for two fighter squadrons, F-35. This is good news for Fairbanks, and in the political realm, probably good news for Mark Begich as well. What do you think?
Yeah, it's always nice to be there when 2,000 people, military and independents, show up to bolster a local economy. Department of Defense has pretty much decided that Eielson-Fairbanks area is where they'll put two squadrons, probably, of F-35s. They didn't choose any other places as possibilities. They'd been looking at Japan and Korea, but I guess wrote them off, which means that in 2016, after an EIS, Environmental Impact Statement, these two squadrons may move there. They're already in Arizona, Utah, Florida, and Vermont. This will be the first deployment outside the lower 48 if they come there.
And what's the time schedule for resolving the decision? You said
2016 is the earliest it could happen. There's going to be an EIS between now and then.
And when they make these deployments, do they tell anybody how long these airmen are going to be in a particular location?
I don't think so. Just having what little military experience I have, 2, 3, 4 years, once you're out of the lower 48, they don't like you to go up there for 2 weeks and come back. They'll leave you up there.
And there's all this infrastructure that goes with it.
There's infrastructure, and then there's schools and family things and the whole deal.
Yeah. So. Okay, Liz, when you're not here in Alaska, you cover the Congress. Every day we hear about the do-nothing Congress. Is Congress moving on Alaska issues at least? And if so, what issues are they moving on, or what issues are they not moving on? Maybe you can give us a summary.
Well, it's true that very little is happening through legislation. Very few bills pass. Our congressional delegation has managed to pass a very few bills that they themselves have sponsored. There are other ways that things do get done. Now that Congress has gone back to passing appropriations bills again, there are little things you can tuck into a report here and there that get some minor Alaska issues accomplished. The other important thing that our delegation does is they advocate, they press the agencies to do certain things for Alaska. And I also think the kind of hidden power of the delegation is the amount of constituent work their staffs do. Some of this casework is very involved, and they really often go to bat for individuals.
And casework would be things like my Veterans Affairs benefits, my
right.
Native allotment that I haven't received, my Social Security problems.
Right. The Postal Service won't deliver my mail exactly as we need it to be delivered. It's a whole lot of cats and dogs of issues, and they dig right in and get into it. But, solving problems of Alaskans one Alaskan at a time, that we're a far cry from where we used to be with our delegation controlling a lot of federal spending.
Now, in Washington, does it make much difference that Lisa Murkowski is complaining about Mark Begich's ads and Mark Begich is more or less ignoring her? Is it really that we have to work whatever goes on in this political dimension?
I can understand that when she sees an ad with her in it for Mark Begich, that she feels like, hang on, I didn't endorse him. So I can understand that. But they do work together more than other delegations do. So there's, he's somewhat justified in running those ads. I would say in Washington, it doesn't make a lot of difference.
And sometimes the delegations run into problems when they're both from the same party, because then it becomes, well, who's really the big dog back in the home state?
When I say it doesn't make a lot of difference, I just meant the dispute.
Right, yeah,
it doesn't make a lot of difference. It's very, very common for two senators from the same state, no matter what their party, to not get along. It's more common than not.
Okay. Speaking of getting along, here's somebody who Sean Dugan is going to tell us about, who is famous for getting along with some and not others. Governor Sarah Palin, former governor of Alaska, is back in the news as she's interjected herself into the SB 21 referendum debate.
Yeah, a lot the Alaska media, at least the ones I know, have been for years trying to get Sarah Palin to comment on the oil tax change. And she has come in over the last couple of months criticizing her former lieutenant governor, now Governor Sean Parnell. It's interesting because we were talking a little bit before the show, and she uses words like bamboozled and buffaloed, and she kind of harkens back to that old-style Alaska politician who's not super smooth or polished and is going to kind of tell it like it is. And I think that's what's also interesting is it puts her firmly on the side, at least on this one issue, with a lot of Democrats and a lot of liberals, as she was when she passed ACES. She thinks that the new tax structure, SB 21, is not good. She calls it a giveaway for the state. She has said that it's the first step toward the slippery slope of another corrupt bastards club. She has, brought up a lot of that went down in 2007 when we first passed ACES. You know, not for nothing, but Paul, you'd be better to talk about this than I probably, but this is the fourth or fifth oil tax structure we've had in this state in the last 10 years. I mean,
is it really only 10 years? Paul, you want to answer that?
No,
I don't remember.
It's going back into the 80s. It's probably fifth or sixth. We had ELF.
We had a series
PPT,
of short-lived ones. PPT was around for about a year, and that was replaced by ACES. So she is back in it. How much difference it's going to make, it depends on what side you talk to. The vote yes, say, yeah, we're glad to have her. The vote no, say, oh, well, you know, she's gone national and few Alaskans really care about what she says anymore. It'll be interesting to see how that works out.
Okay, Paul, I wanted to go back to you. Let's just take a minute here to talk about the governor's race, because the nominations are clear in this race. Well, I guess there are some minor candidates, but we know who the candidates are going to be after this. And we should know Bill Walker is not going to be on the ballot because he's running as an independent.
Right. Right. It's going to be, and I think you really do get, in this race, finally, you're going to get a very clear choice. Your Democrat is a real Democrat, and your Republican's a real Republican, and I don't think they agree on much of anything. And you should be able to, it'll be easier for the voters this time around, I would think. And if I could go back to Palin for just a moment, what he was talking about. She's got
15 seconds.
She's got a 55% negative rating. Well, I think what she does when she gets in here is she more or less solidifies your vote. She justifies what you're about to do more than changes minds.
Interesting. Thank you very much for joining us here on Alaska Edition. We'll be back next week, and we will see you then.
If you have questions or comments about the program, you can email Alaska Edition at alaskapublic.org or write us at 3877 University Drive, Anchorage, Alaska, 99508. Alaska Edition is a production of KAKM. The opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily represent those of KSKA, KAKM, the licensee, or their underwriters.